Welcome to another episode of Framed Conversations with special guest Dana Levy Hoffman, certified health and lifestyle coach. Together we will talk about food, what mirror do to us, and why self-love always comes first. Framed Conversations explores what it takes to become who you were supposed to be. I am Åsa Rydhard, your host, a cultural analysis, executive trainer, public speaker, former pastor, and social impact guide. Now, let's meet today's guest. So I'm sitting here with Dana Levy Hoffman, and this is such an exciting guest for me today that I'm honored to have. She is from Switzerland. And she is a certified health and lifestyle coach. She do a lot of public speaking, and she is a ambassador for Jamie Oliver, his food revolution. And I'm so happy to have you here, Dana, because we have so much interesting things to talk about. Welcome.
Thank you, Asa. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah. So the reason why I invited you is that we met and started talking about different things. And of course, we came in to talk about the thing with food. And the question is, why are we so obsessed with food in our society today? And you had a lot of input about that, because you told me that your experience from being a life coach is that many skinny girls, they look at themselves in the mirror. And when they see themselves in the mirror, they see a fat girl. And you so wisely said, this is all about society projecting stuff on them. So that's where we are starting, right?
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. I think it's, unfortunately, it's not even just skinny girls. I think it's just most women nowadays, I'm saying most, but it's probably a very, very big number, do look at them, don't love themselves. And for all the wrong reasons, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I am, of course, this turned me on, so to say, because I love the thing in society. And I have my talks about frames, the cultural frames that forms us, and, you know, how hard it is to sometimes fit in and how hard it is to break loose. And the thing with frames is we are born into them. Okay. So, and especially when it comes to food. Those projections that the skinny girls see are formed on us all from the day we are born in our own families. But I know that you had a wonderful food experience as a child.
I did. I had, you know, I grew up in Israel. I was born in Israel and grew up there. And my family is very big and very kind of, you know, they're the core of our life. And I grew up at grandma's house, and my grandmother was from Iraq. She loved to cook. She was in the kitchen all the time. I mean, it was weird not seeing her in the kitchen. And life revolved around food completely. And not only did life revolve around food, she also considered, you know, anything health related to be linked to food. So, you know, to grow up through her, you know, seeing her and constantly talking about food, and you sit down to a meal and you're already talking about what you're going to have the next meal. And it was just a very, very big part of our lives.
Yeah. And you said life circled around foods, meaning that food was a center point for your family life and your group as a whole. So you, when you met, you eat, and when you eat to meet.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, until today, both in my home, which is a very small family unit at the moment because we're abroad, and for my family still back in Israel, grandma passed away, grandpa passed away, but they're still constantly, you know, WhatsApp groups. I always see their pictures of food and pictures of being together. It's always linked. There's always a link.
And this means for me that, you know, it's no wonder that food becomes such a centerpiece of interest, or, you know, that we are so bounded to food because it's been an important thing for your families. And I think that's the same for almost any family, that food is important. I still remember the importance of like breakfasts in the weekends in my family. And when I moved out from my home, what I wanted to do at some points when I was like 22 or something was go home and have this weekend breakfast, because that was the thing I was wanting again. I was yearning for that breakfast with everyone. And so food is so much more than food, actually. It's relations, it's memories, it's emotions, it's connections to people. And it's a very intimate thing, isn't it?
It is very much so. And I find that, you know, food could be an amazing thing for some people, and other people will have really bad experiences because they were forced to eat. They were, mm-hmm. you know, everything that we hold in our minds today as adults did evolve most likely around, you know, the home for sure, but also around the dining table. And so, yes, it's a huge impact on our lives. And I find that with my clients, I see it very much so, you know, a lot of people who have issues with their weight, they will bring it back to when they were kids. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of weight on food.
Yeah, because we learn so much when we are kids that we are not aware of. Some would say, oh, I taught you how to use a fork. But what they actually teach us is how to relate to food overall, and what is good food and what is bad food. I once read somewhere that the only flavor all humans all over the world likes is this flavor of sweet.
Yeah.
All the other flavors are learned.
Yeah.
We learn how to like them.
Yeah, which is exactly why when someone starts feeding their child for the first time, a lot of countries now suggest not to start with fruit, because that's anyway something that they're going to like. And if that's the first taste that they're going to get, then they might want to avoid the other flavors. So yeah, there's a lot to say about that for sure.
You can mix a bit of fruit, a bit something else, a bit of fruit,
sure.
just
sure.
to make it an interesting and joyful experience. What do I know? My kids are grown up now, so I don't have to care. But I know that could be a challenge to teach a kid or anyone to eat something new, and it can take a lot of time and resources to actually learn someone to eat, like something they don't like.
Yeah, it's actually, it takes about at least 10 times to taste something for your taste buds to actually get used to it. So yeah. I always tell it to parents, but I always tell it to people who tell me I don't like this or that. And they said, well, you got to try it a bunch of times, and you have to try it in different ways too. I find that, you know, if you don't like broccoli, but you taste it raw versus steamed versus roasted versus, you know, sauteed, it's going to have different flavors. So, you know, to open up your taste buds, I think is a very important thing to do as an adult and as a child.
Yeah. And also historically, I just must say this because my brain tells me, you must tell them about the history. You know, history of food and eating, if you think about it, it's always been something sacred or mystery or intimate and personal about eating. You sit down and eat only with those who are close to you. The old Romans, they lay down eating with people who they wanted to keep close to you. Other people are not allowed to join the table. See what I mean? And if you have a good business friend, you could meet for dinner, but you don't meet with anyone. Mm-hmm. And in rituals and everything, there is very, very often aspects with food involved. You eat something or you share something, like, you know, like in Christianity, you have the Last Supper. And in other religions, you have other kind of rituals where you involve food. And I know the Jewish culture is a lot about food with like Saturday night evening and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So this is food. And you grow up with this healthy, so social thing with food and connected to your family. And then you moved. You moved to the USA. How old were you when you moved to the States?
I was 11 years old when we moved.
So you left your family and your relatives and the food culture and moved to the US. What a shock that must have been. Or...
It was a huge shock because we came to a country where everything was convenient food. Mm-hmm. Everything was packaged up with a lot of promises on the box. and so to move from, you know, grandparents who, I didn't experience this, but I know my mom tells these stories always, when they wanted meat, they would buy a live goat or a live whatever and butcher it in the backyard. So to come from that, from this proper real food to everything packaged, everything treated, everything with hormones, everything, it was huge. The flavor was just not there. Mm-hmm. If we did buy something, it was very obviously very easy to get used to, you know, they called the the American, it's called the standard American diet, which is sad. And I have to admit, it was a very sad situation because, you know, our breakfast became, instead of having eggs or having whatever we ate back in Israel, it turned into something packaged and very sweet and very addictive. Mm-hmm. And so that change was huge. I think that, you know, and going at a very ripe age, you know, 11, you're preteen, your body's anyways hormonal, and putting all that garbage in your body, it made a huge effect on my life.
Yeah. How did it affect you more specifically?
I think, you know, looking back, I was prone to depression. Mm-hmm. I was just not a happy child. I kept blaming my parents for bringing me to the States, but I know now that there was a huge effect on what we actually ate. You know, there was no reason for me to be unhappy. But that was definitely that, you know, going out would be with friends, would be going to McDonald's, which I remember never liking, actually, oddly enough. And it was the life around the table changed. Although my mom still loves, you know, hosting and still loves having meals together, what was on the table was different, and it made the dynamics of the family a little bit different as well.
You did? How?
Because you feel different when you get a packaged food versus food that was home cooked. And so, you know, when you know that your mom put that effort in, and I'm not saying, you know, I love cooking. I hate being in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. I think that 20 minutes in the kitchen is plenty of time to put together a healthy meal. And I don't judge my mom for not having the time or not having the energy. But I think there was this, like, it's a vicious circle, because when you don't have healthy food, you don't have the energy.
No.
Do you see what I mean? So yeah. It was just kind of, it brought us into this like spiral of like a snowball effect. Of, you know, not wanting to spend as much time in the kitchen, not wanting to prepare something because there's something packaged and ready to go that you can just chuck in the microwave or, you know, keep in the freezer. And it was just, it was interesting. I mean, we moved, our whole family started showing signs of overweight shortly after we moved, actually. And it went on for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everything my mom bought was low fat, fat free, you know, blah, blah, and all that stuff. And it was just, like I said, it was just false promises on the box, and it made us more sick and more overweight.
Yeah. And, you know, this makes me thinking, I know you were only 11 at that time, 11, 12, but teenagers can be quite observant anyway. But when you start talking about one, I think it's very interesting that you see the connection between how the change in your diet actually affected your relations and your way of interacting in the family at dinners, and how, you know, your sense of family, and also the individual health, because you say that you were prone to depression. Because I would say that it's no wonder, because you left so much and the whole family left so much. When I hear you talk about this situation, you left your family and everything, and you moved to another country. So maybe all of the members of your family actually had a slight depression because of the change of everything, the circumstances.
Definitely. Yeah. I could say that 100%. I remember my mom was very depressed when we just moved. You know, we had, our family came to visit a lot, but it's still not the same, you know, moving from seeing each other. Probably, I don't think there would be more than 2 days that we didn't see someone from our family, my aunts, mm-hmm. my grandparents, mm-hmm. anyone. And so to move from that to be in a kind of secluded place where we don't have friends yet and stuff like that, yes, that was definitely a huge impact. But also I remember that, you know, in Israel, you could not miss a Friday meal. It was just not even a question. You can't ask, can I go out instead of going, you know, being with you guys. It was being with the family and then going out afterwards. Mm-hmm. And in the States, it very quickly moved on to, well, I'm going out. I'm not going to be at the dinner table on a Friday night. Yeah. And so that's what I meant. Like the dynamics kind of changed a little bit. You know, again, we can look at it from different directions. Of course, you know, we're growing, we're becoming teens. You know, listening to the parents is not even an option anymore. But at the same time, I think that whole kind of feeling around the table definitely did change, and it definitely made a bit of an impact.
Yeah, and maybe I'm just playing with ideas here, because maybe it's also that the very fact that everything changed and that it was manifested through the food. So having these kind of louse dinners constantly reminded you that this is not as it should be. And that made you even more less happy about meeting and eating, because everything, you know, as you said, it was a downwards spiral.
Yeah, definitely.
This is really interesting. And it also makes me think about all the people who move into Sweden these days, and how hard they have. It's hard times about these changes, because it affects them as well as it affects you. The hardship they have with bringing the family together, doing stuff together, eating, I suppose, and that the kids are all over the place, and they have they lose so much more than actually the country per se. They lose their values almost, because values are expressed through their food.
Yeah, definitely.
It symbolizes so much more, and this is something, because this is what I'm after. Food is so much more. It symbolizes your worldview and your values, because things we do are infused with so much more than what we actually do.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, if you talk to any expat anywhere in the world, you know, and you ask them, what do you miss about your country? The first thing they will say is maybe the weather, you know, if the weather is good, if they're not from England. And then, you know, the next thing is probably going to be food, because, you know, you see a lot of expats here also looking, searching for food from their country. Mm-hmm. You know, you go up to the Jungfraujoch, even people who are visiting and traveling, you see a lot of, you know, Asian people from Asia looking for Asian restaurants, people from India looking for Indian restaurants. So, and me personally, yeah, if you find a good Israeli falafel place, I'm the first one there. So I think it is. I think it takes you back. It brings you memories that you really want there.
Yeah, you want to be there. And, you know, the same for me. I know that when I come back from Thailand, I'm going away soon and stay there for a while. And when I come back, I will search for good Italian food, because I want to go back again. It's a way to bring myself back to the country, right?
Yeah,
and this is so interesting. But then we had the other thing about the group and the dynamics, because you said you went to McDonald's even though you didn't like it, and I must say I hate McDonald's. Actually, I can eat almost anything on the whole planet, but a hamburger from McDonald's, no, I would rather die. I can't eat the whole. It makes me feel like, ugh.
Yeah, no.
I can eat other fast food hamburgers, but not McDonald's. So I can relate to that. But even though your longing to become one of the group made you go there, right?
Yeah, I ended up there. I remember only taking fries, thinking at least I'll eat something, because we would end up, you know, I was hungry. Mm-hmm. Or oftentimes I remember, you know, the place that we would meet up, there was actually an Israeli guy selling falafel and shawarma and stuff like that. And I would actually tell them, I'm just going to go eat and come back. So I would actually eventually chose to go and eat somewhere else, or just sit there and really just eat the fries and, you know, just to put something in my belly. But and funny enough, nowadays, you know, my kids, I have two boys, they're 9 and 10. And if you want to joke around and tell them that they're going to get punished, we say, we're going to have McDonald's for dinner. And they start crying.
No. It's so funny.
They think it's punishment. I mean, they know it's punishment, actually. They're quite educated when it comes to that. But yeah, so I think, you know, again, it's kind of like coming again from this world of even fast food in Israel wasn't fast food. I mean, falafel, it takes a while to make, you know, shawarma, it takes very long to make, like these things that were that are considered or hummus and stuff like that, that are considered kind of the fast food world in Israel, which always, 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 by the way, comes with a good amount of chopped salad, you know, with tomatoes and cucumbers and olive oil and lemon juice. Coming from that to the fast food here is going to be fries and something they call a hamburger, but there's like hardly any meat in there, is a huge, huge change. And starting the day with sugar intake will change your whole microbiome. I mean, it will change your whole gut bacteria balance. And so I think, again, in terms of that, our whole change of diet changed a lot more than just how we enjoyed being around the dinner table.
Yeah, I know eating sugar is a very new thing for us. Mm. It was introduced in the late 19th, right?
Well, I mean,
in the 1930s,
it kind of started with in India and stuff, and it was actually considered a drug. It was under lock and key for many, many years, and it was brought to America. I mean, I could talk about this forever, but basically what happened was that was the main reason that that labor, slavery and labor came into play, because some genius guy realized that it was addictive. And that he wanted to make that stuff so that he can put it in stuff, he can sell it, and people will just be hooked on it. And so there's a lot to say about sugar. I don't think we'll get into it today.
But. No, let's get into it. I just wanted to point out that the thing that are like in so infused in everything about our culture today, actually 100 years ago, something like that, was not a common thing to eat.
Yeah, no, definitely. A couple of generations ago, you wouldn't see such high rates of, I mean, cancer was almost non-existing. You wouldn't see such high rates of heart problems, you know, Alzheimer's. All of these things come from our lifestyle changes and choices. And unfortunately, people are not aware. That's the scary part.
Exactly. Anyway, so I'm not surprised that when you are a bit older, coming out of your teens, growing up to the beautiful woman you are today, you left for Israel again. You went back home, so to say.
Yes, I did go back home. I left my sisters and my parents behind, and I said, I don't want to live here anymore. And I actually moved back to Israel, moved to my grandparents' home. I went to, I did the army. It's a mandatory thing in Israel, and chose to live there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And was it the dream that sometimes you dream about something so much that when you actually come back, it's not the same thing as you thought it was, because everything changes and you are grown up now, you're a different person and so on.
Exactly. I think it was very rough for me. I think it was, being in a home that's not your mother's home. Mm-hmm. And I left when I was 17, actually, so it was still a ripe age. I was still not done being a teen, I think. Mm-hmm. And then going to the army, which is a whole different world, and you're one of many soldiers, and you're not being looked at as an individual. It was rough, but I think, looking back, I always say looking back, I wouldn't change a thing, because I think that all of our experiences are actually, good and bad, are actually learning experience for us. And so, yeah, I think my dream was definitely to, go back to being with a family, go back to enjoying the food and things like that. What I did realize, or what I do realize now in hindsight, is that also grandma tried to, adjust to things. And there was a little bit more convenience food, not big, but she was also very influenced by, health advice from TV, and the TV meant that it came from big food company propaganda. Mm-hmm. And so soon after I moved back, we found out that grandma has lymphoma, which is a type of cancer.
Okay.
And so, from this woman who was always revolved around food, everything revolved around food. I mean, you knock on the door and she doesn't even say hello. She just says, "Did you eat anything?" And, it doesn't really matter what your answer was. You'd get a full plate in front of you, really. Mm-hmm. And she would just sit there and stare at you. And before you're even done, she goes, "Do you want more?" It was just this kind of like, okay, food. She was very... her whole life revolved around food, and to come from that to a woman who, she passed away 4 years later, less than 40 kilos, not being able to eat, not being able to walk. I mean, she was miserable, and she wanted it to end. And it was just terrible to see her deteriorate in front of your eyes. This really opened my eyes. I think that was kind of the first spark that I had, that I said, other people that I heard of or know, I mean, I have my other side of the family who both grandparents passed away from cancer, but it almost in a way, it was kind of like, well, their lifestyle was not, it was the complete opposite from my grandmother. And so when grandma started getting sick, I started investigating on natural kind of help for her. I knew that she was getting chemo. I wanted to help her body strengthen. And that kind of started me off with everything. And started my, it sparked something in me. I kind of wanted to understand why someone who was so involved in health and in eating healthy and all of that, why that person got so ill and didn't manage to strengthen her body. Yeah. And it definitely started something off.
What did you discover?
Oh, so much. You know, the main thing that I discovered is that our body has the ability to heal itself. Mm-hmm. The question is, what tools do we give it? Mm-hmm. You know, I always compare our bodies to cars, and I always say, you know, we're taking care of our car. Giving it the wrong fuel is not even a question. You know, we put oil, we check the water, we make sure that the car is ticking so that it takes us places without breaking down. And yet so many people out there, most people, unfortunately, because of lack of information, they give their body the wrong fuel 3 to 5 times a day.
Yeah. Do you think maybe this has more to do with, you know, we get information, but we are lost in our emotions? And we talked previously about how society forms us and teaches us so much about food, and we get addicted to food because of so many circumstances. So many times information is not enough.
I'm not sure about that. I think that nowadays the problem with information is that it's so overwhelming. I think that if you Google anything online, you'll get 10 different sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. And many of them are wrong, and many of them are not wrong. It's just that, you know, your body is your science. If someone tells you carrots are amazing for you, but you're allergic to carrots, you're not going to eat carrots. And so we need to figure out with our own body what's right and wrong. And that's a journey to take. And it's not a hard journey to take. This is what I do with my clients all the time. Mm-hmm. And they enjoy every minute of it. It's just that the information, you need to know where to draw that information. You need to know who to trust, and what sources to trust. And I think that food, there's a lot of things that are addicting out there. Mm-hmm. I don't call them food. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm addicted to tomatoes and cucumbers, yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's because I'm getting good quality, organic, full of flavor stuff that brings me back to my childhood, you know? So it is something that brings me back. It is the memories of a good tasting tomato rather than the cardboard that you usually get in the supermarket nowadays. But the information is important. I think the information is important, and I think it's it will, when you're ready for it, it will start you on this journey, and eventually you will make certain changes throughout the years. I mean, it took me kind of like 8 years to really make crazy changes that bring me, you know, brought me to where I am today. And what I do with my clients is I do try to shorten that time so that they're able to gather that information and they're able to make these changes without years and years in process.
Yeah, but that's something, you know, and no wonder you need someone like you to support you, because what I was after is, like, it takes a long time to change your habits, right? And food is a lot about habits, and you get information. And then you meet your family or your group of friends, and then say, hey, don't you bother, we are happy flappy here together, have some. And it's really hard because, as we said before, food is so much infused with being socializing with people, being part of something. So it's really hard to just think, oh no, it's not healthy for me.
No, but you know what? You brought on a really good point, because I am not about eating healthy 100% of the time. That's not realistic and it's not humane. I find that when we do take care of ourselves and take care of our diets, when we go out once or twice a month and enjoy a time with friends, look at me. I will have that hamburger. I will have that pizza. I will have whatever I want, because feeding the soul is just as important as feeding your body good fuel. So yes, there is, you know, but I think the main problem is that people nowadays feed their body the wrong stuff on a daily basis. And when you fix that, and when you correct that in a way and help your body thrive, then not only are you able to enjoy that hamburger more or pizza or cake or whatever it may be, but you also know how your body will react afterwards. Your body speaks to you loud and clear afterwards. And you know that after that hamburger, you will probably lay on the sofa pretty lethargic and try to digest. And it's fine. You still enjoy it. You still enjoy the time. And, you know, for me, I don't care. I don't care if once a month, let's say, I go out with friends and I enjoy a good meal and I know that I'm not going to feel great afterwards because I enjoyed their company. So there is that to, you know, to think about and to say, okay, well, you know, we're basically feeling sick every single day and you don't know how sick you are until you're actually healthy. So yeah, we're walking around feeling pretty miserable on a daily basis. And when we fix that and we finally feel amazing, that one time that you eat it, you go, okay, well, this is going to take another month until you get that stuff in me again, because it was just not fun. It was great to be with friends. It was great to be with family. But I think, you know, that choice is going to stay for that once in a while.
Hey, once you fixed it, it's okay. I have friends, though, who are addicted to food, so they can't do it once. Then they are lost again. See what I mean?
Especially, yeah, the addiction is,
it's another story, right?
It's a whole other story. Yeah. I think, yeah, it's like, I can talk about that for hours. It's, yeah, no, let's not get into that.
But then also, you know, changing, if you have a lot of changes to do, since you are, habits are easy. That's what, habits are almost invisible because that's why we call them habits, right?
Well, the habits, this is the really important, interesting part, is that our habits are not because, you know, we're weak and we can't, you know, change ourselves and things like that. Our brain nowadays, 2018, works the same as it did when we were in the caves.
Yes.
Okay. So we are, you know, we want to feel safe, and the safe feeling is when we do things the same way. We don't like change.
Yeah.
Is an amazing way to change that. There's a couple of tricks that you can do to change that, and a habit will break within 3 to 5 days. So it's not actually that hard.
But I've heard and know that if you really, really want to make it a true habit, something you don't think about even, it might take up to a year to actually incorporate that new habit into your own life.
I think it depends how you do it. I think that I kind of nailed a good formula to not have to go through that, because I think the problem is that what people do nowadays is they say, okay, from now on, I'm not having any sugar and they're not going to have anything sweet. And it's a big shock to the body, and they go through detox and they, you know, it's rough. Mm-hmm. And so my idea is not to take things out of your diet. It's just to replace it with healthier options. So even when you want to have something sweet, you'll have something sweet. It's just going to be a good combination of things that will give you energy, that will give your body good fuel, rather than depriving yourself from something. I think that's a really big point.
That sounds like a good strategy. But then we have the other opposite thing, which we started with, you know, the thing that has happened to us, that society has made us into. When we look at ourselves in the mirror, especially skinny teenage girls, they look at themselves into the mirror and they don't even see the right picture. They see something who's very fat.
Yes.
And that would prevent them from actually making healthy life choices and eating and stuff, because they can't even see themselves as they truly are.
No.
That's really hard to handle, right?
It's terrible. I think it's, you know, so many women are walking around looking at pictures of models who, when you look at them in real life, they won't even look like that. So, you know, society is making us think and want things that are not even realistic.
Yeah.
And that's the main problem. And I think that making a change in your life has to start with loving yourself and loving your body. Hmm. And so a lot of people, men and women, but we see it unfortunately more with women, we're a lot more sensitive, we're a lot more influenced by media, unfortunately, but what we see is that we're trying to, these women and men are trying to make a change, but they're unable to, because the core of what needs to change is broken. Okay.
Yes.
You have to start by loving your body and appreciating your body before it looks what you want it to look like in the mirror. And so, you know, to wish for this perfect body, I mean, we're all different. We're different shapes. We're different sizes. Some have big boobs. Some have small boobs. Some have a big bum. Some have small bums. And it's okay. And to appreciate your body for what it is already brings you a step further, because when you appreciate yourself, you're more inclined to give your body what it actually thrives on.
I totally agree on that. But do you know why I think that women are more prone to don't like the bodies?
Why is that?
And you almost went there because especially all women, what we see, as you said, are pictures of the perfect body. I say perfect because who decided that that would be perfect? There is a long history about that as well. Yeah. You know, throughout the ages, from the Stone Ages, there have been different ideas about what a perfect female body is.
Yeah, it used to be nice.
And those images are not even real. And for instance, grown-up women like me, I think I'm a grown-up woman, and you are as well. I'm a mature woman.
Yeah.
Pictures of mature women hardly even exist out there in public spaces, because the bodies we are infused with are teenage bodies. A grown-up woman don't look like that. Because we are grown up, not just like men. A grown up man, a mature man, do not look like a teenage man or a 20-year-old man. You know, there is a huge switch for a teenage body, man body, between like 17 and 23 or something even. It's not only until then, they are actually the kind of man's body. And then it switches again, and that's okay for men. But and women have the same, our bodies have the same thing.
Yeah.
We grow and we carry children, and the body is equipped for that. So we can't, if we had a teenage bodies all our life, we couldn't even make children. True thing. And the other thing is that, which might not everyone have been thinking about, is that women are, I think it's taught to us from our childhood. We are taught to think that people are watching us all the time. And we are used to that. We are being watched. We are objects to others' eyes. And we constantly ask ourselves, how do I look now? What do they see now? Do they see the right thing right now? And men, they're walking around looking at the world.
Yeah.
So they don't care, because they have a perfect body and they just enjoy the world. And we are walking in the world looking, who's looking, who's looking, who's watching, who's watching?
And the funny thing is that we always think that other women are watching, but other women are thinking about exactly the same thing. They're thinking that they're like, yes, being looked at. And it's true. It's pretty sad. I think it's really the society that we live in nowadays is very broken in many, many ways. But I think it's
part of the thing with the frame is because when we are born, and this is a natural thing, that we get our self-image from the people around us. Because we see ourselves in their eyes. And if they would look at us with a loving eye and just appreciate us as we are, the society wouldn't be as broken. Yeah. But then when we grow up, it's not enough with the family, because we have our friends and we have all the other things, the newspapers, the magazine, the social media, whatever happens around us. So the world grows and they become our eyes, and we don't really think about that, and this diffuses our own self-image, because we can't see ourselves without thinking about what others see. So how can you love yourself? Because as you say, I think that is the key to actually just appreciate yourself for who you are.
Yeah, definitely. And this is why I think a coach's job is so important. I think that everyone needs a coach. A coach needs a coach. I think it's a lot of people nowadays are walking around miserable, confused, and to have someone to guide you the way and to help you and to listen to you, it's so important. It's so important nowadays. We're stuck in front of social media all the time. We're stuck in front of machines, phone, TV, iPad, you know, computer. And all of that information there, I consider complete poison, because you really genuinely don't see as much as you need to see. Real women, real men, you know, strengthening each other. Yeah. Everything is kind of like, you know, fights and head to head, and it's not the right energy that people need in order to do that. And so I think that, you know, to start loving yourself, it's not an easy task to do alone. It's really not, because again, like you said, you know, it's things that we were brought up with as children, depending on how our parents spoke to us and our siblings. And then it moves on to how we were growing up with, if it was with a bunch of magazines and a bunch of, you know, commercials and things like that, which unfortunately in our generations, yes, this is how we were raised. And so it's not an answer that I can give in one sentence, but I think it is definitely something that is more important than anything else at the moment, anything else. You know, eat whatever you want. If you don't love your body, there's going to be a bad communication there and you're going to be miserable. You're not going to be a happy person. To bring that happiness first and to bring that appreciation for your body first, I think is the number one goal that everyone needs to strive for before doing any other changes.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, the fun thing is, not fun, but the strange thing is that actually I believe sometimes you don't realize that you have problem with loving yourself or your body because someone else can help you discover that.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I see that with so many of my clients and women that approach me. I work mainly with women. That's why I keep talking about women, but also men. I think it's the we're trying to fix the symptoms instead of taking care of the core of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, because the symptoms are signs. And you said, you know, I also help people to love themselves in some ways. But it's more about daring, stepping up and claiming your voice and be the expert you are or whatever. There's kind of the same process, because when you start challenging people to say good things about themselves and actually talk themselves up, that's when you discover that they have problems with actually appreciating their own genius.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I remember this as this was a big part of me developing into the woman that I am today. I think that when I was a teen and moving to the States and all of that kind of procedure, I don't remember loving myself. I don't even remember liking myself. I thought I was stupid. I thought I was ugly. I thought I was, you know, fat. I thought I was a many, many, many things. And just when and this kind of started only when I moved back to Israel, but it just started. When I started changing that around and looking at myself and appreciating my body, and I have to tell you, after two kids who were very close in age, your body changes and it's different and it's not perfect. And I love it more today than I ever did when I was this beautiful, skinny, you know, little girl. And so I think just bringing that change to my life, so many other things opened, so many other things changed. You know, when you're, it brings you to a more positive state of mind. And when you have a positive state of mind, positive things happen, right? And when you have a negative state of mind, a lot of negative things happen. That's how the universe works. You know, you can call it universe, you can call it God, you can call it whatever you want. But at the end of the day, you will get what your mind consumes you with. And rewiring your brain and changing that way of looking at yourself and looking at the world makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Huge. And then the other thing that you said, that also coaches need coaches. So you might have a coach, I don't know. I for certain have different kind of coaches. and sometimes people tell me, oh, but you are helping others. Why do you need a coach? Well, because
you're human, right?
I'm human. I can't coach myself. And it doesn't matter that I've discovered things about the frames and how we are hindering ourselves, that we can't see ourselves. But listen, I can't see myself either. I need someone to help me see myself. Because definitely. And then I can help others because I sorted things out. So, interesting. Are we going to sum these things up, Dana?
Sure, let's do it. Let's do it.
I think it's been a very interesting conversation.
Definitely.
Yes, and we ended up with self-love and how to find help with self-love, because that's key to everything. What I heard you say was actually that we need to love ourselves. We need to find a balance with the healthy food that suits us in our lives, and find habits that is healthy. Did I miss anything?
No, I think that was pretty much it. I think that, you know, again, I think that every woman out there needs to realize that her body is perfect at the moment. It's been through a lot. It's taken her a long way. And to start off by understanding that and appreciating your body will help start so many other beautiful things in life.
Yeah. And I just can add on that note, hey, when you were born, your parents thought you was the most perfect, precious thing in the world. And that's still you. So keep on rocking and love yourself. And find ways to become the person you are supposed to be.
Yes, super important.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dana, for joining me in this conversation. I loved every minute, and I hope everyone else loved listening in as well.
Thank you, Asa. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, and I love talking to you as well. It was great. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this talk show. If you have questions, reflections, or think you know someone that would be the perfect guest, please reach out through the contact form on readup.com. And hey, don't forget to subscribe. See you soon.